Karen from County Fairgrounds USA, countyfairgrounds.net. Welcome to today's podcast.
Do I have the infamous one-armed juggler on the line with me?
That would be me.
Hi, Mr. Dale. How you doing today?
I'm very good. The one-handed juggler is so good, I'm ambidextrous.
Okay. Well, you know, a lot of people would like to know exactly how this one-armed juggler got started and what he did and how long he did. You want to talk about it a little bit?
Absolutely. Well, I hurt my arm and hand when I was 8 years old. I fell on it very bad, my right arm and hand, and the blood clotted. And in 1964, that was a huge deal. And so I became an instant lefty, and I had 25 operations to save my arm and hand and get the most use out of it. But I can't do very much with it. I can move two fingers about an inch, and they tried to get me a pinch, but they really couldn't do very well at it because there's not much circulation in my thumb. They had to remove an awful lot because it was infected with the blood clot. So, but anyway, I learned to be very one-handed, very left-handed, and I found juggling right after all my operations were over at about age 15 and a half. And what happened was I walked into the school cafeteria and I saw this guy juggling for a whole table full of girls, and the girls were going crazy. And I was like, mm-hmm. I need to try this. And so, I don't know, I knew you could juggle with one hand somehow, and I bought two oranges, and which is what he was juggling in the lunch line. That's why I bought them. And I was really bad at it, but about the fourth time, I figured out when to throw the second ball. And as soon as I got it, even though it was awful, as soon as I figured it out, and I was actually doing it a tiny bit, running all over the place, I was just so excited, and I thought you had to be a movie star or something to really be able to do that. And I never realized that just anybody could do it before I saw that one student doing it. And then I was doing it. But about 4 days into this awful juggling, I mean, I was running around whole classrooms to try and keep those two objects up in the air. So about 4 days later, my friends came to me and said, okay, yes, you can juggle, but you stink and we don't want to see it anymore, and quit doing it. So I went into my room and I practiced for over a year before I showed anybody again. And I was very, very dedicated. And I literally used to be practicing, and I would fall asleep, and I would wake up the next morning, and I would be on the floor, and the juggling balls would be all around me. So I was very obsessed with it. But in a little over a year, I did my first show between numbers at a band concert. And I'm going to tell you something that is probably, well, you wouldn't expect, but I will tell you anyway. It's in my book, so I don't mind covering it. The first show I did, I was a high school kid, and I wasn't that good yet. I mean, I know I'd practiced for over a year, but I could only do two objects, and I was doing it to this musical number on the backside of the Snoopy versus the Red Baron record. And so I wasn't that good, but because nobody had ever seen a one-handed juggler before, I got like four standing ovations through the number, and then another one at the end of the number. And I was smart enough to realize that, okay, well, you know, did I do a good job? Well, yes, I did. I mean, I didn't drop anything, but did I really deserve that much applause? No, there's no way that I deserve that. I was just a kid who could basically barely juggle compared to you know, a professional juggler. So, but right then I resolved that, okay, so they like it because I'm juggling with one hand, but I've got to know that that I didn't really deserve that. And my goal instantly was to be able to actually deserve the better applause that I knew I was going to get, and, you know, have. And any there's a couple other one-handed jugglers now, and each one would tell you that, yes, people applaud more for us.
Okay. Do you remember what your first professional show was? I'm kind of curious.
Well, I think my first professional show was called the Ring-a-Ding Bombastic Let Yourself Go Parade that ran 3 weeks at Six Flags over Mid-America.
Wow.
Right after I graduated high school. But it only ran 3 weeks. And then I was still obsessed with juggling, but see, my parents were Depression-era people, and you had to have a job. You always had to have a job, and they wanted me working. And so I didn't want to do anything but juggle. So after that 3 week engagement, I was already starting to get heck from them. And so there wasn't anybody street performing in the St. Louis, Missouri area at the time. Maybe there was a musician somewhere that was, you know, playing saxophone or something and just had his case open to take tips, but not doing an actual act. And I started doing that because I was getting heck from my parents again, and I had to do something. So what I did was I started going around to parks, and I would try to attract picnic groups.
Hey, Dale, I don't suppose you were trying to attract girls. And by the way, did the girls like you now?
Well, I've been married for 42 years, so I would say, but you know, this is interesting. The girls meant nothing to me after I found juggling, but in the back of my mind, I was always like, well, you know, when I'm good, they'll like it. But of course, very few girls ever went for a juggler. There were a few, but in fact, this is a funny story. I always tell this story. It's like my dating, if I ever got close enough to a girl that I met their parents, that was never a good meeting. So what are you going to do with your life, son? I'm going to be a juggler. it did not work very well. And you can't, you know, even after I started getting pretty darn good, you can't say at dinner, I'm really good. It just doesn't come off. It does not come off well. It never did. And even with my current wife's parents, no. Well, I say current wife, my wife. I've never had another wife. I shouldn't say current wife.
Shame on you.
But really.
Okay. All right, so your parents wanted you to do something else, and what happened?
Well, so I started to learn how to be a street performer. I started to learn how to actually attract people. Now, I still wasn't all that great, but I learned very quickly that playing my bugle, I had been a French horn player for many years, and I quickly switched over to the bugle to attract attention because you can't play the French horn right. The French horn's played with your left hand, the valves. Well, mm-hmm. I needed my left hand to juggle. I'm the one-handed juggler, so the French horn was completely out of the picture. But the bugle, that's the neat thing about the bugle, there's no valves. So I couldn't use my right hand to use the valves because my right hand doesn't work. And I couldn't use my left hand because I was juggling, but I could with a bugle. So I learned to attract a crowd with a bugle. But the interesting thing about my early street performing is just like you may have seen on the Three Stooges or in comedy movies, I wasn't really that good, and I was sometimes paid to leave. and sometimes people made snide remarks when they put money in the hat. But I was getting better gradually, and eventually I would come home on the weekends with a hat full of money. So my parents really couldn't do much then.
Mm-hmm.
But then I went off to, I went off to college during the year. This was during the summers. I always was in college during the regular year, so I didn't have to worry about working then. But one of my classmates in band, because I still played the French horn at the time, convinced me to try out for Ringling Brothers Clown College when they came into town. And by this time, I was a big fan of W.C. Fields, who started out as a juggler. A lot of people don't know that, but he did. And I had already came up with a funny walk that was a combination of W.C. Fields in his inebriated condition and our supposed inebriated condition, of course, and Charlie Chaplin. And so when I did that Clown College audition, I mean, I was the one-handed juggler, which you know Ringling Brothers would like. There was never another one-handed juggler. So they liked that, of course, and then I could also, you know, be clownish. So I was the only one that was taken from that audition.
Oh, Dale, that sounds great.
Yeah. But, and then I had to wait for, because there was I had to wait over a year before my class started. And so I kept having to street perform in the parks as I did to keep my parents happy. But when I made the Clown College, they did agree that I should go. I should leave college and go. And then I was hired very quickly by Ringling at the graduation performance. There's a graduation performance that tells whether you get a contract. And I was hired, but what was more important in the end was that there was a guy there at the graduation performance that was all that he ran one of these Bureau of Lectures. It was school assemblies is what it was. And there were national companies that did school assemblies in those days. And he met with me even before Ringling did and said, look, I know they're going to hire you, but if you don't end up liking this, I want to be the first call that you make when you leave the circus. And that is exactly what I did. I stayed with the circus not very long, and there were a lot of reasons for that, which are covered in the book.
Wait a minute, Dale. You need to tell the audience about, you've written a book about your experiences. By the way, are you still performing?
Yes, I am performing, and I will continue to perform even after I complete this tour. I'm doing a 2-year tour of fairs and festivals, and it's a retirement tour. And that includes 222 and 2022 and 2023. But after that, I'm only going to do motivational speaking shows. And yes, I did write a book, and it's called One-Handed Juggler, A Memoir, The Wild and Somewhat Uplifting Life of Dale Jones.
Okay. So when's it due to be released?
Very soon. It should be out a little bit within a month, but it should be in very, very many places. I like to say everywhere, but of course everywhere is an exaggeration, but it will be in many, many places within a couple months.
Okay. By the way, I'm kind of curious, did you ever finish school?
Yes, I did. In fact, I got a PR degree, and I went, when I went back to school, it was over 10 years after I graduated from high school that I graduated from college. But by then I recognized, and at first I tried to to stop it, because you know, when you're young, you're so self-conscious, and I was a good juggler by the time I really started working a lot, and I didn't want to be known as a good juggler just because I was one-handed, and I fought that, which turned out to be a mistake, of course. How can I run from that? I mean, it's me. And I didn't want to leave it. And I had found that somebody from New York had called all the talent agencies around St. Louis to try and find this one-handed juggler that they heard about. And none of them knew of me because I tried to hide that fact. And so who knows what I missed out on? I mean, it could have been something good. It might not have been anything, but I decided right then and there, well, you know what? You don't want to leave this. You like it. So you might as well just embrace it. So by the time I went back to college, I realized, hey, this is a good story. There's never been another one-handed juggler. You might as well use it. Not only use it, but you might as well get good at telling your story. And for years, you know, I was my own publicist, and I still am, but I don't do it quite as much as I used to, but I even offer fairs and festivals a very unique offer with my contracts, and that is that I offer them a media kit that I will send to their top 30 press contracts. Or, I'm sorry, press contacts, and not contracts, but contacts.
It's okay. It's okay.
Yeah, I know. But it works. I mean, it really works. I don't think any performer has ever thought of that before, but media kits are a big deal with PR firms for commercial accounts. Mm-hmm. So they mean a lot.
I've got another couple questions here. Let's see.
Yeah.
First off, do you have any kids?
Yes, I have two kids. I have one, and I'll tell you this: we delayed having kids, so my kids are younger than they should be. I'm 66, and my wife is 4 years younger than me. So we should have had, or we could have had kids earlier. But my wife loved traveling with me. It turned out she just loved it. So she kept telling me for years, I'm going to want to have kids in a couple of years. And then a couple of years would go by and she'd say, I'm going to want to have kids in a couple of years. And
yeah.
Then she finally told me, okay, it's time for me to have kids. And I said, well, all right, that's fine. It takes 2 years for the insurance for that to kick in. And she even told me, she said, well, I told you I was going to want to have kids in a couple of years. And I'm like, honey, you've been telling me that since we got married. Mm-hmm. So, you know. But my two kids, getting back to them, I have a daughter, Katie Lee, who is 27, and I have a son, Wilson, who is 20. I'm old enough to be a granddad, but I'm not.
Oh, it'll happen one of these days.
Okay.
So what do your kids think of this whole thing?
Oh, well, my kids grew up with it. I mean, they don't know any other dad, so... The only thing is my kids, you know, they had no idea that I was as well known as I was. Cause I mean, I'm just dad, but this is interesting. My daughter was helping me with the promotions for the book when I was writing it, and she set up a site for me. And when she did it, she found this Ringling Brothers special called Clown College, which I was asked to do in 1986 and be one of the stars of. And she found it on YouTube. And she said, I had no idea you starred in this Ringling Brothers special. And I'm like, well, I'm surprised you found it. I didn't know it was on YouTube, but Katie, you weren't even born yet. You know, I never even thought to tell you about it, but it's actually on that site that she set up for me, but it's real easy to find. All you have to do is then search Clown College, a CBS special, and it comes right up. So yeah, I mean, they never knew a different dad. They don't think much of it. I'm just dad.
Okay, all right.
Isn't that the way it always is in your family? You're never famous in your own family.
Oh, I have gotten some really interesting answers from a lot of the entertainers. I always ask about the kids, and it's always really interesting.
Now, my parents, that's a whole different story. In fact, even when I quit Ringling Brothers, and one of the reasons I did is you just can't make money. I mean, it's kind of a sad deal.
Yeah.
But there were other reasons, which I cover in my book, but that was the only entertainment job they ever thought was any good, I guess, because I made regular money. Even though I was losing money every week, that didn't matter. Because, again, they were Depression era. You had a job, and that's the way it is. You stay at your job until you die. And, you know, so, in fact, much later, when I was featured in People magazine, they said, well, you weren't on the cover. You know, I mean, they just never liked my job at all.
So what did your father do for a living? I'm curious.
Well, he was a salesman, and my mother was a teacher, and those were basically the only jobs that they thought any of us could have, except for being a doctor or lawyer.
Of course.
And I could never understand that. I would every once in a while talk to him, but it just made him mad. I said, well, okay, there's barbers, restaurant workers, there's, you name it, there's construction work, you know, I mean, there's all kinds of work, but that was the only work they knew of and the only work that you could do, and you had to have a regular job even if you lost money.
Okay, Dale, so tell me, you got to do a bunch of big shows and started to get hired a lot, because it looks like you've been a lot of places. I looked on your website. Do you have some fond memories you want to throw in here?
I have so many fond memories.
Give me a couple.
Okay. Well, I'll tell you some stories from the road. There was a time when I was heading to the Iowa State Fair, mm-hmm. when my wife was with me. This was in 1994, when she was actually pregnant with my daughter. We were driving north from Kansas City, and my wife noticed me that I kept looking over to the side and not on the highway in front of me. And she said, what are you doing? And I said, well, honey, is it just me? Or is there a truck going in the wrong direction on the other side of the road? And she looked over, and, you know, because I couldn't be sure. I thought maybe it was in, you know, a frontage road, you know, right next mm-hmm. to the highway. But she said, wow, you're right. There is a truck going the wrong way. And this was before cell phones. So I didn't know what to do, but I wanted to warn people. And it was late at night, I have to tell you this. So it was mostly just trucks. Big semis coming from the other direction. There weren't as many cars. But I determined that I would turn my lights on and off, just flash them and flash them and flash them and flash them, to let people know that something was coming, was dangerous. And hopefully they would understand that it was coming at them. And I must have done it. You know, these things, they always seem like they take forever when it's going on, but I don't know exactly how long it was, but it was for a few miles at least, and nobody crashed. There were a few trucks that went into the median. There was a grass median. But finally, a police car zoomed by me on the shoulder because I was in the far lane. I was in the closest lane that I could be to flash the lights. But the cop zoomed by me and then went up a little while ways and then turned around in the median, came to a complete stop in the lane in front of the truck. And when he came to a complete stop, then I slowed to a stop too, but continued to flash my lights. And of course, by then he had his lights on, to warn people as well. But he then got out of his car. I thought it was a very brave thing to do because the truck was still moving right at him. He got out of his car, got in front of his car, and assumed the position, pointing the gun straight at the driver. Mm. And the driver eventually slowed and stopped, and there was nothing more that we could do, and we had to get going. So I never did find out if it even made the news. But I think, and I'm not sure, but I think that I probably saved some lives that night.
So
that was a good story. And then tell you another story. This is not such a good story, but it's you know, show business is a rough business, and you meet a lot of very unsavory people. And
hey, I take, you know, offense with that.
No, I didn't say you were, but there are some unsavory agents and managers, and it's usually on that side of it that they're not that nice. And I was invited to do a showcase up in Massachusetts by an older agent who has since passed away. But anyway, and it sounded good. Now, some people may not realize that listen to this, but showcases for a performer like me mean that you go up there at your own expense and you
right.
try and get jobs by performing at a time when people hopefully are looking or watching a show looking for talent. When I got up there, there was another agent that was representing another act that happened to be a juggling act as well, but it was a family act. They went on first, and I'm going to say that they did fairly well. Okay? They did fairly mm-hmm. well. But then I went on. And this doesn't always happen. I don't want people to think that I'm bragging because it certainly doesn't always happen. But I really hit. I mean, it was like one of those shows where everything worked and the response was just terrific. And I knew that at the end it was like, okay, I am ready. I am going to get some jobs. So as I'm walking down the steps from the stage, all these fair buyers are running over to talk to me about performing at their fair.
Oh, geez. And
from out of the blue, it was like he materialized. This other person, this agent for this other act, suddenly started yelling, "Oh, wow, Dale, you're right." You know, he's talking to somebody. "Yeah, that was good. That's the best I've ever seen Dale do. I've never seen him do that good before. He has never done. I mean, I've seen Dale many times." And it took me a second or two to realize what this guy was doing. And when I did, I tried to fight it. And I said, which is really true, "Hey," whatever, I'm not going to say the guy's name. "Hey, Bob," I'll say Bob. "Hey, Bob, you've never ever seen my show before. You don't know any of the... You don't know what you're talking about." And people were starting to listen to me again. But then he said, Oh yes, I have, Dale. You just don't know. I've been in your audience many times for a showcase. Oh yeah, I've seen your show." And I tried to put up more of a fight, but at that point, these people were already starting to leave. And he just won. There was nothing I could do. And I only got one job out of the whole thing.
Seems to me you should have gotten more.
So. And you know, in my book, I say this, I'm like, you know, it just shows you how corrupt and evil these people can be. But I have to be honest, he got a heart condition not that much longer. And about a year later, he died on a subway in New York. And as I say in my book, when I found out about it, I have to say, I'm sorry, but I wasn't sad.
So. Tell me.
So that was a bad story. You want some fun stories?
Let's try one. Okay.
Okay. One more story. All right. The Alaska State Fair. I loved it. I did it twice, and I was actually the fair manager who retired, But I was actually his favorite juggler when I was up there. And it was so fun because I'd never been to Alaska before. And just the fact that the sun stayed up all day, and it started in the northeast. And it came up about 5 o'clock in the morning, and it went slowly all the way around and set in the very southwest, northwest, so almost a complete circle, and it set at like 10:30 at night. And one of the things I love to do when I perform is find out what the local people that I'm performing for like to talk about. And I mentioned the sun a couple times. I said, I just can't get used to your sun here. And they would laugh and they'd say, you know, everybody tells us that. So, of course, I did it in every show then because, hey, you know, that's what they liked. But I never had such good seafood. And this was just at the fair. It wasn't even at a great seafood restaurant, but you know, they say that the seafood is so good from there. It's true. It really is.
Okay, Dale, that sounds like a good thing. You've done a lot of fairs and a lot of shows throughout the years. I would imagine you cover a lot of this in your new book.
I absolutely do. And it's also a very motivational book. I mean, I learned as disabled people do to, when I came up against a barrier that I could not get around, I could not get through, I should say. Successful people and people with disabilities instead learn to go around the barrier. And that's what I did with the invention that I came up with, which was a completely new way to juggle. And it's called the Bounce Multiplex Juggling System. I didn't realize it at the time, but because I was just trying to succeed and compete and win against normal two-handed jugglers. But years later, I figured out that what it did was actually slow juggling down for me and allow me to do three balls in a new way that I would be able to do easily and do tricks with and talk while I was doing it. Because when I first started getting performing jobs as a juggler, that was one thing that dogged me. I could still not do three in one hand. It's just too fast. And of course, now I can do it, but I couldn't at the time. But so people would say, can you do three? Can you do three? Can you do three? Can you do three? And it was a question that just, I mean, I heard it in my sleep, and it just bothered me so much, and I had to figure out how to do it. And then after I learned it with three, I learned it with four, and then I learned it with five, and then I learned it with six. So I invented this new system, and it's very much part of the book. I put it in there because it's a motivational book. Not that I think people will read it, especially that aren't jugglers, but I feel if you're going to motivate somebody, you have to really prove that I really did do something. I'm not just whistling Dixie here. I really did use determination and perseverance to figure out how to be a one-handed juggler. And of course, it wasn't only juggling. You have to learn every aspect of performing if you want to do well.
Okay, so tell me, I know you've got some shows booked this year for the rest of the year.
So I do. I'll be at the South Carolina State Fair on October 17th, 18th, 19th.
Okay.
And then I'll be at the Dublin Business Agricultural Fair in North Carolina on the 21st, 22nd, and 23rd. And then I come home, but I could have booked more actually, but I wanted to concentrate on getting this book out. I want this book out. It's already like a month late. It took longer to do it than I thought. And I think people tell you that you could get it out a little easier than you can. And I got to be honest, this is not a little souvenir book that I'm just trying to make money on after a show. This is a real book. It's 185 pages, and it's entertaining, and it's very motivational. And it's even it even has a standalone motivational chapter in it for people who don't want to sift through my entire story. So I really spent some time on it, and I think it's going to sell well, and I certainly want it to.
So okay, so how do people reach you if they want to talk to you?
Well, Dale@DaleJones.com. Should I give my phone number, or is that?
Oh, sure. No, if you want to, go ahead.
Okay, it's area code 636-751-4545, but I prefer texting.
Okay.
But you can text me at that number. And my email address is Dale@DaleJones.com. My website is DaleJones.com. And very soon on my book site, there will be a way to order that book, but I'm not doing it until it's actually ready to be sent out, which
okay.
is still going to be
and
a couple.
I will tell everybody that's listening to this podcast that we will have it on our website too for you.
I love that. Thank you so much.
Absolutely. So I've enjoyed talking to you, Dale. Thank you very much.